So this is just another one of a random boo in a series that might get deleted afterwards, but we'll see. And I'm sat on a polka dot green,
quite picturesque, really,
sofa at in the keynote space at the Mozilla Festival, MozFest, and I'm in the company of Paula Ledieu, who is at Archieville on Twitter, and we've only met sort of maybe 1 minute ago, and I've kind of deduced that you're doing some sort of a research project at the moment.
That's great.
And you're nodding lots, yes. And it's about things like, should we be making the web more accessible to people? Web creation. Have we reached that ambition to do that? And if we have, was it the right thing? And what should happen next? Okay. And you're recording me answering some questions, and I'm, okay, recording you. Okay.
We're all recording. Yeah. We're all recording. So can I, Alan, get you to start by just introducing yourself?
Sure.
And to the extent that it's possible, maybe just describing a little bit of the relationship you have with Mozilla.
Okay. So my name is Alan O'Donoghue, and on Twitter I'm Techno Teacher, T-E-K-N-O, Teacher. And by day, I'm a teacher in a high school in the north of England. And then outside of school and within school as well, I try to help engage and inspire the digital makers of tomorrow. And I use a few sort of tricks and techniques and different disguises to do that and make it seem exciting at the same time. So the mission I'm on at the moment is I'm trying to inspire, engage the digital makers of tomorrow and the ones of today by making a whole series of events, mainly in the UK, but it's kind of spreading around the world at the same time. And to make these events accessible, so that they're not, when I say accessible, I don't mean so it's easy to get into them. I mean that they are in all sorts of localities, but also to ensure that there's good quality in these events and to have a whole diverse range of things to do. So some of the tools we're using at the moment are things like the Mozilla WebMaker resources, and Raspberry Pi, and all things like this. And it just depends, because sometimes when you're hungry, a burger is great. Other times, it's a salad. It's what, and we're agnostic. We'll use anything that we can. But the Raspberry Pi has been the flavor of the last 3 years, and that's the tool that we're using predominantly.
Awesome, yeah. That's really cool. I didn't realize it.
That fits into 140 characters as well.
Yeah, no, that was great. Yeah. Thank you very much. So my first sort of big question, I guess, is you're clearly doing a lot of teaching digital technology skills, but why is it so important? Why is this next generation of digital literate folks, why is that important?
I wonder how different this question would have been if you'd said to me, why is it important that children can use an instrument to write and express what they think about things, or why is it important that children can use an oral language to communicate their ideas? And I don't think we should be saying, why do they need to learn how to do this thing? It's just a given that they need to. A lot of my work is with children, and I believe children are the most creative people I've ever worked with. And what's fantastic is the younger they are, the more creative they can be. And our UK education system is very successful in lots of different ways. And one of the ways it's successful is by the time a child is 13 or 14, we've educated them to think in straight lines and not to be creative. And when people are creative, that challenges that system. And sometimes what happens is, as when children are young, they'll say, "Oh, Mum, Dad, Can we go and do so-and-so, so-and-so?" And the adult, and it kind of crushes those ideas, sometimes say, come on, you know, there's no way you'd ever be able to do that. Now, computer science is a means that you can use to model and build and simulate things. So it's in as much as you can model ideas with plasticine, Play-Doh, Lego, paint, matchsticks, computer science is another way. But when you actually model some things with computer science, rather than it just be a model, you can actually make it do real things. So you're saying, why is it important? Because computer science isn't that accessible to children at the moment, while all these other play tools and modelling tools are. So I think if we can provide children with the means that they can actually build real working models and test these models out using the tools that exist within the field of computer science, they can build solutions. And there may even be solutions that are facing our world right now, things like poverty, the inequitable distribution of health and education, And you never know, it might be that six-year-old child that sat over there looking at us, maybe the one who, okay, it's a bit of a cliche, to cure cancer, but they may be able to help solve some other problem that's facing our world at the moment.
Fantastic. Okay. So yeah. This morning we heard Mark Sloman talk or ask us all to think about what is the next step that we take in this journey towards our six-year-old being able to really meaningfully contribute to some of these issues.
So we're talking about the future.
We are talking about the future, but I'm interested in your journey in particular and what you think is your next big step.
Well, the thing about the present and the future, in a way that it's kind of the same thing. There was an author, his name escapes me at the moment, who said that the future has already happened, it's just not very evenly distributed. So if Mark Sermon is saying, look at how far we've come, look, this is great. Yeah, we're in a space in London where there's a unique kind of people that are here. They're not typically representational of the population as a whole. So it's kind of, people talk about geeks, and you know, here we have a community of geeks and people who may be happy to be called a geek and people who are sort of happy to hang around with geeks. Really, the next step should be making this sort of thing seem accessible and normal and acceptable to everybody, not just this sort of self-selecting community. So it is easy when you're preaching to the converted. You can do things with those converted that you can take risks with them that you might not take with the general public. And the next thing now is really we need to reach out and scale up what we're doing to make it seem more normal and more acceptable, so that when you're watching a soap opera on television, and one of the characters who you might have thought before, you know, works in a laundrette washing people's clothes, thinks, actually, I wonder if I could recode the way that the washing machine's done, because I've come up with a formula, that we're not going to go, oh my god, look, that would never happen. We have to see that this sort of thing is actually normal and acceptable. Yeah, a long-winded answer, but that's what you get from me.
No, that's fantastic. Yeah. And then, so my final thing building on that is, what's missing? What's stopping us from doing that? What are the blocks that you see to us being able to sort of reach that main public scale?
In as much as there is with anything, that's, some people are quite happy to conform to certain groups, and then we have people who are sort of closet members of that groups, and I think at the moment there still is this kind of stigma associated with being a geek or being a person, and there are some stereotypes, and I think some people are worried that if they start hacking Minecraft or they start they develop an API for something, that suddenly, oh my goodness, that means I'm going to start growing a beard and I might start developing problems with my own personal hygiene, because there are those stereotypes that the media perpetuates. We have to see that anybody can do these kind of things. And that's why it's great when you say, look, a child can do this. Look, somebody's mum developed that app. It wasn't a software developer. And I think it's about achieving a sense of normality.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Alan. That was marvellous.
Okay. So, I'm still recording.
Go for it.
Yeah. So, what you're doing at the moment, is this value-driven or is this profit-driven? Or
value-driven.
Value-driven.
Yeah. So, I work for Mozilla Foundation, which is a non-profit. And our mission is to champion the open web.
Okay.
And we define the open web as a web that's knowable, mm-hmm. interoperable, and everyone's.
Okay.
And so the work that we're doing, and I'm particularly involved in the WebMaker program.
Okay.
So that's the tools, mm-hmm. the community, and the content and curriculum.
And these are the things like Popcorn,
yep.
Hackasaurus X-ray
exactly.
goggles. Yes.
And Thimble. Yeah. Exactly right. And the teaching kits and the starter makes, mm-hmm. and that whole kind of world, and of course the community. We've got this fantastic community that's already alive and well and kind of kicking those tools and using that curriculum. And so it's all about ensuring that we have that next generation that value a knowable, interoperable, and open web that belongs to everyone.
So we run... this summer was the first time we fully got involved in the Maker Party.
Great.
And we ran two large engagement events in Preston. Now, a lot of people haven't heard of Preston.
I know where Preston is.
Oh, it's a tiny little city in the north of England, just sort of north of Manchester. But we put on these two events, and we were really hoping we'd get sort of a decent audience of like 30 or 40 people to come to these. And especially with the first one, because it was our first time to run a maker party, we actually had 150 that came along.
Yep, we hear this so many times, the appetite.
And I was actually petrified to begin with, because we only actually had a staff of about 6 or 7 volunteers. And I thought, how on earth are we going to scale this thing up to give 150 people a quality experience?
Yep.
But there was an element of me that thought, you know, well, let's just go ahead, feel the fear anyway, and see what happens. One of the really nice things about the webmaker materials was a lot of it was such a fairly intuitive, and the documentation is part of it, so that when they sat down and we said, here, try this, hack this, build this, they were just able to take to it straight away. The thing that I actually found was a lot more magical was that the children took to it straight away, but it was the responses of the adults, and the adults were such a stand and immediately on the periphery going, I wish I'd had this when I was a child. Oh, gosh, look. So we had, for example, we had a 6-year-old girl who's in her first or second year of primary school.
Yep.
And she sat down and she used a Hackasaurus tool, and she pulled up the website for her school, and a lot of the policies are on the school. And she went, and her brother, who was 8 years old, was sat there next to her, and she did a bit of 6-year-old girl, and she took the page where it had the homework policy. Now, her literacy wasn't as strong, but it basically read something like this after she changed it. It was, from now on, we've decided that homework is only going to be for boys, you know? Because she says, why shouldn't... Because girls have to do all this work, and I think it's time. You know, boys should do, you know, some more work. And I thought, wow, a 6-year-old girl. Now, you know what I was saying earlier? I was saying about how it's about showing people the power of what you can do with this.
Yeah.
And, you know, you might say to a girl, no, there's no way a 6-year-old girl could change the homework policy. And it was only conceptually that she changed it, and it was only in the... how it was represented on her computer. So she hasn't actually done any harm. But maybe from that, a conversation may then have happened. Should boys and girls have the same homework? And who knows? But once you start modelling that thing, you can then say, well, what would a world look like if boys got more homework than girls? And, you know, and I just thought, wow, you know, that starts a whole conversation.
Goggles is actually one of my favourite tools for precisely that reason. Is that actually the least important part of it in many respects is them fiddling around with code.
Yes.
Actually, it's, you know, that critical question that's always interesting for me is, what would you like to change?
Yes.
Yeah. And getting them to sort of think, and inevitably, interestingly, it's, I want to change something on my school website. And
yes.
So often we end
that's
up at
right.
their school website.
Yeah.
And so for me, I mean, you know, it's so interesting because you end up having these conversations with, as you've experienced, very young people about school governance and,
and you have these formally agreed standards about uniform, and we can never change these things.
Absolutely.
But you know what? Let's just go and take the risk and change it and see what happens.
Exactly.
That was what Aunt Miller was alluding to before with this big thing that happened. But the other thing that I got thinking, still talking about Hackasaurus, so... Naturally, I would want to talk about the amazing things that happened at the event and say, like, it was so cool. There was a rather unpleasant thing that happened as well as part of this. So there was a bunch of boys who came along from not a high school I teach at, but one of the other schools. And they were encouraged to come along to this event. And so maybe if it had been left up to them on their own, they may not have done so. And but they did, and they had some fun. But I think because they weren't getting a lot of supervision, they started to think, well, what else can we do? And a bunch of boys together, somebody says, yeah, here, do this and do this. And before you know it, unknown to us, they wrote some very, not very nice things about their head teacher. But they didn't do it in a, they did it in an unbelievable way. You know, basically it was saying like the head teacher went out on the town, drank quite a lot, was sick all over the place, was arrested by the police, all this kind of thing. And that probably would have been okay. But then they decided to go and share it on Facebook. And the next day it was all over school and people saying, is it true? Has this happened or not? And the head teacher was rather annoyed and angry with me, and he said that I had encouraged these. No, I hadn't really, but one of the things that comes out of this is to say there are people who can go out there and not using Hackasaurus can actually go and do these kind of things.
Absolutely.
And if you're determined you want to do that, it's not just about being an opportunist, but if you want to spread hate and distaste and all this kind of, you were going to find out how to do that. But a lesson from this was, if you give people... technology doesn't make people do those things. People have always been cruel and nasty to each other. So they may use technology, they may write something like kick me on a post-it note and slap it on somebody's back. But that was a tool at their disposal. And yep. Here we say, look, boys, you actually had an opportunity here to do some good. You actually chose to do some bad. And, you know, you need to weigh up what were the impacts now of your actions, and what can you now do to lessen the impact of those actions and try to correct it. So there's a lot of morals we can draw from that.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I mean, I think, I don't know how familiar you are with the digital literacy work that's being done around the standards. Doug Belshaw has been doing some amazing work.
I'm just a little bit aware, but you could assume I know nothing about this.
This week, I think Doug, this weekend, Doug is launching this work that he's been doing with again, a community of educators. And folks who are interested in developing this standard. And the thing that's really noticeable on it when I look at it is it's a grid, it's like a 4x4 grid, if I remember correctly. Only two of them are about writing code. And yet it's a digital literacy standard. Mm-hmm. And all the rest are actually about how to be a citizen of the web. What does it mean to be that? And I think, you know, what you're putting your finger on is actually, you know, identifying these are great tools, this is an amazing platform, and just like the early pamphleteers when we got print technology, there'll be some amazing things that for the first time get a public airing and a public distribution, and then there's going to be a lot of small, mean, nasty things that also find
surface. And I suppose, are you alluding to the fact, like, when they say mankind discovered fire, fire can be an excellent servant, but not a very good master, that offers the opportunity sometimes for the very not so nice aspects of our humanity to come through.
Indeed.
And we talk about things like advances like drones and UAVs. They can be a fantastic tool to have in sort of a disaster recovery situation, but at the same time, it may be the drone caused that situation in the first place.
Exactly right.
So technology can do both good and harm.
Yep.
A really nice anecdote that came out of this as well was we run these days in school where we suspend the whole curriculum for a day. We call them extended learning days. And we use one of these to look around the idea of cyberbullying and this. And we threw into the mix the web maker resources. And there was we started off with open data, and we said to the children, here's a bunch of open data. Go through, spot some trends of things that you... And there was a bunch of such of 14, 15-year-old boys, and they discovered the fact that the NHS in England publishes plastic surgery data. And they were like, oh, my goodness, look, it's got breast reduction statistics in there, and breast enlargement. And they thought this was really, really funny. And there was a bunch of girls next to them. And the girl had actually started off talking about something a bit more like looking at endangered species. But the idea that boys found this topic so exciting hooked one of the girls. And what they did was, rather than make something then that was going to, you know, look at breast reduction, they started thinking, actually, body image is quite a big thing, especially for girls, because they feel like, well, can I feel proud of the way I look? And they started taking web pages and hacking these web pages and saying, look, on this BBC news page at the moment, it says this. What would a person who had a very low body image see when they read this page? And they started changing certain words. It was like fat, obesity, and all this kind of thing. Whereas somebody with a very confident, high esteem of themselves would see the words beautiful and charming and all these kind of things, just using the Hackasaurus tool. It's like, wow, that is incredible, you know. So it is a very powerful resource, but it needs to be used sensitively.
Well, and I think, you know, this hooks around to, I think, some of the things you alluded to earlier on is, and also needs to be contextualized with people who can pick up that behaviors and have conversations around it.
Yes.
So actually turn that into learning in and of itself. And, you know, that's just good learning.
Sure.
Absolutely. That doesn't matter about the tools.
Yes. Whether you use a paperclip or just a pile of fresh air.
Indeed.
And another nice anecdote to share while we're talking about Hackasaurus. Sorry, I'm going on and on here.
This is brilliant. Yeah. I love this.
So another one of the roles I'm in at the moment is there's this big drive at the moment. I've been teaching ICT for such a long time. Now I'm going to have to teach, computing, aspects of computer science. Alan, will you come into our school and help give us, you know, a few insights into what you're doing? So one of the things I do is I play games sometimes with people, and I do things that I think are funny that sometimes come back at me because people don't find them funny, which is unfortunate because sometimes with humour you have to take risks. But one thing I've started doing, and I've forgotten this title now. The Secretary of State for Education in the UK is heavily despised by a lot of teachers because of some of his ideas and notions about how education should be. And some people champion the fact that he said a few months ago, actually, children should learn computer science. We think this is an important thing. So when I sometimes in doing these events with teachers, and it's like, and they come along and I ask them how they feel, and we're in the room and a lot of them are saying, gosh, I really don't know where to start. I've taught business studies, I've taught French, I've been teaching ICT, and now I'm going to teach computer science. I don't know where to start. And then I say, I was thinking exactly the same thing. And have you read the news this morning? And what I do is I pull up the BBC News site for today, and there it is. Michael Gove this morning announced in Parliament that he's actually making a U-turn. Computer science doesn't have to be taught anymore. Instead, we're going to go back to teaching children skills that they need for business, things like how to present ideas. And you suddenly see this sense of relief move across his face in the room, like, oh, thank heavens for that. But as you read on, it then says things like, Mr. Gove also announced that he's going to extend the holiday period for teachers. He's going to increase their pension packages. And people start to read on and go, hang on. And then about the fourth paragraph says then, and in fact, Michael Gove also poured praise specifically on one teacher by the name of Alan O'Donoghue, who has been using the webmaker Hackasaurus tools to fool people into believing things that aren't true. And people will read on, and some people never get past the first paragraph because they, and I said, now while you're, and then we talk, like, what have I done? I've hacked the web page. While you're reading this and you're not in school today, your children are probably right now on a web browser doing something that they shouldn't be doing, and this message pops up that says, you've won an iPad. Are they going to believe that? And if you were to do this with your children's school, how would you use this? Because just because we see something that has the BBC badge on it doesn't necessarily mean that it's true. And, you know what they say? If something appears too good to be true...
Probably is. Absolutely. Okay. Brilliant.
Yeah, I've been bending your ear. But
I mean, it's wonderful. Thank you.
Lovely
so
to meet
much.
You, Paula.
Indeed,
and
likewise.
You're at Archieville.
Archieville, yes.
Where does Archieville come from?
So a big part of my...
Can I guess? Yes. Is there something like architect and town? No, okay.
Almost. Yeah. Close. Archives.
Okay.
So a lot of my work
see
over
what
the
you
years...
Did there.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. It's not very subtle. Has actually been about working with archives and trying to see if I can bring some open culture practice to big institutional archives. So for about 3 years, I was the director of digital at the BFI.
Okay.
And then before that... I worked for the BBC on a big project called the Creative Archive.
Okay.
And a big part of sort of my work has been involved with archives. So Archiville is actually quite an old name now. It's not as relevant as it used to be, but it's
almost spelled like archive with ill.
Exactly. Exactly. And originally when I came up with it, it was this idea of a utopian world where archives actually were free and open.
But hasn't the web allowed that to happen in a way?
Yeah, it has. Yes. I mean, I still think we've got a long way to go before we see, you know, the big institutional collections made available. But, you know, things like Europeana have gone a long way towards that. Wikimedia has gone a long way towards that. Things like even actually Flickr.
Sure.
The Creative Commons collections within Flickr. I mean, it's one of the most extraordinary still image collections in the world. It's open. It's free. It's great.
Okay.
So, yeah, there's a lot to say.
Right, Paula, it's been a delight to meet you.
Shaking hand, your hand. Thank you so much.
And please enjoy the rest of the Mozilla Festival.
Likewise, please.
Okay, thank you.
Cool.